Testing, testing.
Ay, hasta con delay, vato.
No, es que...
Delay, echo, y... ¿Ahoyla?
No, es...
¡Au! One, two. How about that? Julio Iglesias would like that. There's a lot of reverb. I don't know. I'm going to get him on this next album, so I'm going to... I'm doing an album for Willie and myself. I did one, and the IRS kept it, of course. They confiscated everything Willie had. Nelson.
That's right, yeah. ¿Qué pasó?
Well, the IRS cleaned him out and took all the tapes that were in his, all the master tapes that were in his studio. And instead of getting it back, I'm going to redo it. And the format's a little different, but... Julio wants to sing on it. Yeah, and it was his idea, and I said, gracias a Dios, and it's like to help Willie. That's what Julio said, I want to help him, you know. We were doing this way before the IRS problem, but this will come in handy really good for Willie. I've never been in trouble with the IRS because they haven't caught me. Yet.
I have so much I want to talk to you about, Joe, but... there are some things that are more important. As we have time, we'll go back to your early life. Maybe if not today, when you come back. Because you will come back in March.
Hopefully, yeah, that's the plan.
Even if I have to go to Temple, Texas and chase you down, put some guards in front of your house.
That'd be great. Yeah, find a couple of days.
Estaba hablando con el señor Lares en la mañana, el papá de Shelley. And it suddenly occurred to me that in the last 10 years, I guess, the big labels have returned to Tejano, you know, music. How does that come
if you
about?
Mean the big labels,
Get Capital and Sony and
okay,
who was the first one to get involved with them?
You know? I was. My 25th silver anniversary album was offered to CBS Jose Bejar in LA, who is now with Capital.
When was that?
1985. And. They turned it down. They gave me a million excuses. None were valid, but they were excuses. So what they did is they gave me a distribution deal.
Capital?
No, CBS International, yeah. I mentioned Capital because the guy that was in charge there at the LA is now with Capital. They turned it, so I got a distribution deal, and when they saw the sales on it, and the damn thing sold by itself because they did no promotion on it.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know who they were dealing with, apparently.
They didn't want to know is the sad side of it. Yeah. It's you know, so they signed me directly to the label. So I became a CBS International artist, and following that. They started looking for talent, and they got in the picture and started recruiting groups. And Jose Bejar, from that experience, went to Capitol and figured he'd start the division for Chicano music. And since then, before CBS, I had done one with WIA, but they weren't in place. Mm-hmm. To WIA. Warner Electric Atlantic.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah,
we have been on this machine saying, "Who the hell is
WIA?" Who is
WIA?
Yeah, WIA at the time was a division of a distribution point for Warner Electric Atlantic, but they also had a record label, WIA, for Latin, but they weren't in place and ready. I recorded No Quiero Más Amar and. Renunciacion. I gave them two albums, and they weren't able. They were beautiful people, but they weren't able to handle the distribution. They weren't ready. So WIA faded. While I was dissolving the contract with WIA, I was writing the contract with CBS, and so CBS came into the picture. Capitol came into the picture. Warner Brother has come back into the picture. WIA. Latin division, and A&M got in the picture. RCA, of course, in and out. Of course, RCA had always had a Latin division, but they involved themselves with the Tejano music. And that's in the short period of 6 years since 85. Actually, in 5 years, well, 85.
Where does Sony fit in?
Sony bought out Columbia Records, or CBS. Yeah, so I'm now record for Sony International. But that's how this happened.
See, when I was there in Texas, I left in 81, I kept hearing people saying, well, you know, Capitol or one of these EMI, whoever they're in.
Capitol EMI, yeah.
You know, we're going to be recording for them. Like Esteban Jordan brought it up one time that he thought he might record for them.
Yeah.
And so the talk was already in the air way back in 81 that they might come back.
Well, they've had Latin divisions, but they were not recording or recruiting Texas music, Tejano music.
They probably considered you guys small fry or something, yeah?
Most definitely that. Their mentality and idea of what Tex-Mex is just totally alien, and simply because they are aliens, you know, and don't know or understand what Texas music is. They don't understand that it's American music in two languages, and that therefore it has a greater audience to play for, you know. Both languages, both cultures, you know. But anyway, they they became aware of the market through the push and shove and sweat and hard work that the artists have had to do for themselves, go out and promote and do it all. But I'm not at all happy with any Latin division, because no matter if they do their best, they still continue to, they insist in segregating themselves. And that's not the future of Tex-Mex music. It has to have a crossover. And the Latin divisions just want to stay Latin. And this is America, man. I mean, my records are for sale for any and everybody.
Excuse me. You mentioned a name, Joe Bejar, is that his name?
Who? Jose Bejar.
Cómo?
Jose Bejar.
Who is he? Sounds like he plays in kind of a key role here.
Yeah, Jose Bejar was with CBS when I joined them.
¿De dónde es el hombre?
Es de Los Ángeles.
Oh, yeah.
Cubano, young man. Once he, like I said, discovered what was happening there, he started hustling, you know, going after it. Like I mentioned in front,
yeah.
That's why he went to Capitol Records. Capitol took him on because now he knows everything about Tex-Mex, right? So he set up the division that he has had in the division. But yeah, he plays an important role.
Are there other equivalents in other companies? I mean, other. I assume that when the major labels decided, do you realize that Chicano music was discovered by the major labels in the 1920s?
Well, Beto Villa.
Well, he never recorded for the major labels, though.
I thought he was in 1949. He was in that with RCA already.
Well, but that was after the fact. See, in 1926, I think it was Columbia who decided to move into the field of Chicano music. They came to Los Angeles and recorded. I don't want to get into our story because you're
the but I didn't know that.
And they recorded all Narciso Martinez. They recorded a whole bunch of people from Texas, RCA, Bluebird, and all those people. And Flaco Jimenez's father recorded for Bluebird, for Decca.
And Bluebird, is that the same?
It's RCA Victor. It was a subsidiary of RCA Victor.
Oh.
And todos estos viejitos, you know, they recorded for the big labels. Because the big labels, he had recorded the black music in the early 20s, and they made a lot of money off of that. And somebody blew in their ears and said, hey, there's a lot of music in the Southwest, you know. So they moved in here and set up operations in San Antonio and Los Angeles and Dallas. And they bring in the musicians and set up, you know, provisional recording studios in hotels. And then in and out, you know, they just come in and out.
Interesting. You know, I didn't know that part of the history.
Yeah. And they made a lot of money off of Narciso. Les pagaban $3, $1, whatever, for the record. Yes. A Narciso, yeah, Don Santiago Jimenez, and all those guys.
Wow.
And we discovered that La Chicana, they were buying records. And they were like 25, 30 cents a record. So it didn't take very much for the companies to recoup, you know, the investment in the talent. And they made loads of money, from what I hear. I've never been able to get into all the books and to find out for sure, but those who have done a little more investigation on that, and that, from that end of it, have told me that it was a very lucrative thing for them. But during World War II, que se acabó, que había un shortage de wax para los discos, they stopped recording completely. And then when they started recording again, that the major labels
are back,
have awakened to the possibilities of Chicano music, especially in Texas. And that's I was interested in finding out, how is it doing? I mean, is this having an impact on the smaller labels? What is your impression of that?
There aren't hardly any more, like, not back when there was Key Lock, Buena Suerte, Sarape,
right.
Guti Records, and, you know, Ben, artists would start their own labels. Son of Key Lock, of course, I was Buena Suerte, and Agustin was Guti Records, and so on.
Yeah.
There aren't, they're existing. However, I'm at the point to where I may have to redo that. I've got like 30, at least 30 masters of Little Joe and the Latinaires, Little Joe Johnny and La Familia, Rocky and Little Joe and Johnny Rocky. And I probably have some 130 masters, including mine, 30 with other artists that I recorded. And I'm thinking now that I may have to return to an independent label and just hook it up to the distributors to get the crossover market that I'm have been after for so long for this kind of music. But there aren't any small labels, because ahorita the major labels are...
Were they more or less squeezed out by the companies, or just the economic circumstances that caused them to fold up, more or less?
That, and like in my case, I mean, I'd much rather, of course, be with a major label, a worldwide label, than paddling my own records out. I mean, it was great for me to go through that, but I'd much rather have a giant look after me, you know.
Obviously.
But when it's a giant and they're not looking out after you, I can do more on my own independently than they've done for me at this point. And that brings me to this last recording, that they have a national campaign, and then they're going to start distributing internationally in Mexico and in South America and Europe.
Excuse me. What's the title of the last recording?
What about it?
The last work you've done for them.
It's 16 de septiembre.
Oh,
it's the title of the album,
the
yeah.
The poster,
oh, yeah.
Which I have in here somewhere, and you're supposed to autograph for them.
Yeah. That's the title of the last album, and that's designed for a crossover market.
No ha salido todavía.
Sí.
¿O ya salió?
Yeah.
No traes copias contigo.
I brought you a CD, a tape, and a poster.
How do I get my hands on it?
They're in my room.
Okay. Before you go, I want you to let me have them.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, do you feel that that the major labels don't push you and the others that are recording with them as much as...
I don't feel that. I know that for a damn fact. That's why I'm so upset and been pushing them. And wanting... I've been... As of last year, I told them I was leaving. But we've talked it over, and this campaign decides for me whether I stay or leave from this present album. Because they're just not... They're not promoting our product. They're just recording it. And when I came in, there were no budgets. I guess I've got budgets now, you know, and I know that my budgets are 3 or 4 times larger than the other groups. And I mean, I probably have a budget up to about $60,000 per album that I can call on, you know. But they never have any money for, I guess maximum would be $15,000. For the other artists, and that is big because they would have zero budgets when I first went in. I told you they didn't have nothing, so they gave me a distribution deal.
Do you think that when they record a Julio Iglesias, do they give them a lot more promotion than they do to...
Well, of course, but you know, Julio Iglesias sells all over the world. But who knows, maybe Little Joe would sell over the world. You can sell a product all over the world if you sell it. If the product, of course, has to hold its own.
Yeah.
But you hear all kinds of music that are sold all over the world instantly, almost overnight, that's what a major monster company like that can do, if that's what they want to do, if they choose to do that.
They can market it and sort of
sure they can
sell it just on the basis of advertising.
But these guys didn't want, don't even think beyond Texas. There are now, you know.
They don't distribute your music to, say, California or Arizona and New Mexico and places like
they
that?
They do very sparingly. And
what about the radio stations? How much are they?
The radio stations always almost play whatever the record company representative brings to them and courts them and lobbies and gives them the material to play. So it's pretty much they fall into that format. Música Tejana is in demand. People want it, but there's no product. And the radio stations, when they can get a hold of it, they spin it.
That opens up a whole new question, Joe. What is Música Tejana today? As opposed to, say, 15 years ago, have there been changes?
Yeah, there has quite a bit in terms of the music itself, the way it's constructed. It's not as go ahead. It does. They're not having to think musically, because it's a lot more simple now, and it's small groups, and it's all electronics.
Yeah. So yeah, I noticed that when I was.
So you don't have to be a horn player to sound like one, you know, through just pushing una tecla, and. That doesn't musically it's not what it was, but it's still there, and there are some bands like Ruben Ramos with the horn section, and there's others.
No, that's fine, thank you.
But the emphasis is on this little smaller groups, young kids coming up
with synthesized music.
But it's still a mix. There's still,
but the basic sound is still there, isn't it? The polka beat, that what makes it Tejano. Is that still preserved, in your estimation?
Yeah, another thing is, like, 15 years ago, a band would play all kinds of music, a Chicano band. Opposed to now, it's mostly all, they just play La Polka, you know, hardly anything else.
Yeah. Is this good or bad?
I think it's poor, because they should be playing boleros, danzones, rancheras, merengues, and everything that Tejanos have had the ability to play, blues, jazz, rock and roll, you know. I don't mean to literally play all that, but at least give the music that taste and feel, you know.
As you used to do in your albums, or maybe you still do that, Dan.
I'll always do that, I guess, because like I said, I record American music in two languages, and I've been real fortunate, and I like to experiment, and I've had some great teachers and musicians with me there who I learned from. And I grew up in a time when, I grew up listening to the big bands, to the jazz groups, quartets, quintets, trios, all kinds of music. That influenced me, and that's why I've recorded the music the way I have. Country music, all of that, you'll find it in my repertoire, you know. And that's missing.
¿Cómo se llamaba
today's
el yerno de este Beto Villa? He plays saxophone. What was his name?
No es el sobrino.
I think it was era yer. ¿Cómo se llamaba?
Some young skinny kid.
No, this guy's old now. He's about your age, or maybe older than you or me.
Oh no. Yeah. Wale González.
Right. Mm-hmm. I once asked him, you know, what is the essence of Tejano? See if you agree with him. What is the essence of Tejano music? And he said, Tejano music is the the dotted eighth 16th note pattern. That's every band somewhere is going to play that little group of notes somewhere along the line. Is that true? That
you know. I guess different things, different strokes for different
folks. I've noticed
folks
it in your some of your recordings that.
Oh yeah, and I like Isidro Lopez. I love to accent things, you know, the staccato in the music, but that comes from the mariachis. So, what Tejano music to me is like taking the mariachi feel and doing it with a band. Which I'm doing a reverse now. I'm doing mariachis or doing Little Joe.
I heard some this morning.
And it works fine, man. It's good feeling, you know. It goes, it works out real good. But it again, Tejano music is made up of two cultures, of two lenguas.
Yes.
And that's why the music comes out with a different dimension.
Is the Western, I notice you're playing, there's a lot of Western feel in some of your recent stuff. How strong is the Western, the country Western influence in Tejano music?
It's been, like I said, I grew up with that, but here lately, I have a deal through CBS for two albums, which is now Sony, to come out of Nashville. Tu Amigo was the first one, but I got no support from Nashville simply, and they were straight and ahead about it. If they're not totally in control of the project, they don't want to, they're not gonna handle it. So me being the hard-headed Mexican I am, and I was already on my way with this album went ahead and did it anyway, and I got no support from them. But any radio station that gets a hold of it, I got a couple of cuts in there with Willie. You'll hear my music played on the country stations, Gavacho stations. They'll play the Chicanos, the Margarita. They'll play that, and Marie, which is another tune Willie and I did, similar like Margarita and Napolka in two languages. You Belong to My Heart, and other cuts. But I got no support from. So it's important because I play a lot of Gavacho gigs, country. You know, Billy Bob's in Fort Worth. You know, I play with Willie around the country and other acts, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. So I got a big Anglo country western audience that can't find my records. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I asked, what you were just saying reminded me of something that in a discussion I had with Gibby Escobedo and Oscar Lawson. What happened to Oscar, by the way?
You know, I've not seen them in a long while.
How about Gibby? Is he still around?
Who?
Escobedo?
Yeah, I see him.
Did they revive Latin Breed or something? I heard something.
Off and on, they go in and out.
They don't stay on it.
Not steady. But they had a hot album a year or so ago.
How's Jimmy doing? Is he fading out pretty much, or is he staying?
Jimmy
Edward.
He got a lift order with Manny Guerra as a producer for CBS Sony.
Manny Guerra is working for CBS now?
Yeah, he was like a producer for them.
Well, he's a long time, he's been a long time Chicano music promoter with that in Texas.
The man has been a great force behind that.
Yeah.
One of the real good producers for Texas music. And He's been there a long time. He's been a big force.
¿Cómo queda tiene este man? He's an older guy, isn't he?
No, he's real young, about my age.
How old
about 150.
Are you 50 yet?
I'm 51.
51?
October 17th. So Manny's about around there.
Anyway, I was
maybe a little older. He was there as I was.
Did he play with Hiro Lopez at one time or somebody?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He was a drummer for Isidro.
What about Isidro? You know, I tried to look him up this summer when I was in, because I only spent about 10 days with him. I didn't have time to really get in touch with all the people I wanted to. But I did try to get a hold of him, and I couldn't find him.
Isidro's finding well, and I just, this year, I organized a show for Isidro in San Antonio. And I invited my friends. A lot of people came out. Narciso Martinez was there. A lot of the older guys, and a lot of bands, a lot of the younger guys, some of the younger people. It was great.
Is he well recognized by the young musicians as being sort of somebody from the past?
Not the young people, and that's sad because Isidro contributes so much with his music and his style and his songs that he wrote. You can tell immediately that they're Chicano songs, his melodies and his words, his lyrics. I've always praised him and I always recorded his material. I'd like to have more of it, and we always talk about it. Yeah, I'm gonna send it to you, and it doesn't happen. But Isidro was certainly made a big influence in my life, because musically, I was just a little kid. I first opened for Isidro in 1957 in Victoria, And he had a big band. We had a four-piece band. It wasn't even Little Joe at the time. It was David Coronado and the Ledners, four-piece. So we played on the floor for him. And since then, I was his fan. But since then, we became good friends. And Isidro ha salido de pedo con todos here along or somewhere along the line. El perro, they call him El Perro. But with me, siempre, that's why I did that thing for him for a long, long time. Gracias, dude. He's still around. Isidro's one of the guys that could be brought back. Con mariachi, con conjunto, con band, como sea. He's still got a lot of good left in him.
Wait, what about the Texas Tornadoes?
Tan mal locos que yo. We work together here and there, not as much, but they're doing great.
Is Flaco Jimenez still with them?
Yeah, they work independently and together. But yeah, Flaco's with them, and of course Freddy's already worldwide known, so that's a big plus for them.
We were talking yesterday, Joe. Getting back to this Tejano sound and where it's going, where it's been. I always associate you with the long line of orquestas. I think you would consider your group at one time at least to have been an orquesta. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I appreciate that. I guess at one time I tried it, and I'm honored that I would be associated with those guys. If we're referring to Isidro and Chris Sandoval and Juan Colorado, that's heavy company, Beto Villa and Valde Gonzalez.
Well, I always see you as a culmination of a line of music that started with Beto Villa. And I see you as the last of the great orquestas tejanas. You know, that's the way I see you.
Well, thank you.
But my impression has been that synthesized music has cut into that tradition and sort of transformed it into something else. Although I know you still, like tonight, will you have the two trumpets with you, or
No, tonight, as a matter of fact, I've been traveling with seven musicians for the last couple of years. I've had a steel player with me. This will be his first weekend. He won't be, and neither will the saxophone. I've compacted to a five-piece band, which I'm having fun. It's after a while I need challenges, and this represents a challenge. I can do all the orchestration, the arrangement with five guys, and that's through electronics, of course. Mm-hmm. But the trumpet has a harmonizer. It doesn't work through everything all the time, but you using it properly where you need it. Son two trumpets, mariachi, and of course synthesized violinists.
Wait a minute, are you saying the trumpet mariachi comes out of the synthesizer, or do they play it?
No, he plays it. The trumpet player plays it with a harmonizer.
What's a harmonizer? I'm sorry.
It's a gadget that it plays up to three voices. You can have like two trumpets and a trombone.
So the trumpet player is playing, and then there's a second part going on.
Yeah.
And hooked up to his trumpet or something? Is it computerized?
Yeah, it's computerized.
And how does the computer know, you know, what line
you
to follow?
You program it.
You program it in advance.
Yeah, and some things,
you guys,
of course,
are cheating.
Yeah, exactly. But the challenge is in knowing how to use it.
Well, let me ask you this: why have one trumpet with a harmonizer and not two trumpets live?
Because I don't need to use two trumpets all the time. At certain points, I just want to hear one trumpet. And with this harmonizer, not only, like I'm getting ready to go to Europe, and they prefer to have just six people, and
why,
I have a five-piece. Well, because one of the tours will be, like, I go through the government, they'll be flying me, keeping me all government, and they just want six people.
Is it economics?
Yeah, for one, and then for security and for all kinds of things. And if I decide to take a 10-piece band and pay for it myself, that's okay. But like I said, it's challenging doing this, I started with a four-piece, no bass, just two horns and the drums and guitar. And then when David Coronado left the group, it left me with a tenor and a drummer, me playing guitar. And hey, le daban los gas, and nobody cared or knew. Then I discovered there's a bass. My brother came into the picture, and it grew, you know, to where I've had a 15, 16-piece band. Now I'm back to five, sounding like 15, 16. And the days when I had like seven horns and
oh, back in the
70s. Yeah, back in the old days. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have all the old recordings, and I, you know, I see the transformations going on. And having spoken at, I spent a whole day with Tony Ham Guerrero at
his place. He's in San Pedro.
And you know, he really cares for you, and he feels bad about, at least from his standpoint.
Go ahead, Jim.
You could either sign for that, or I could take care of
me. He felt that kind of guilty that a lot of the musicians had left you at that time, and they went and organized for Pia Factory.
And he said, shouldn't feel kind of guilty. He is guilty.
Well, I don't think he wanted to admit it openly, but I could tell that he felt a little bad about that. But he says, "But you know, Joe, you can knock him down. He's gonna get up again." That was his words.
And it didn't. No, there. I mean, I have a policy about the musicians that come here. You can go whenever you want, but you can only stay as long as I want. You know, and there's no, and if you have something better to do, you should go do it. You know, nobody should be here. That's
I will.
Right. You see, if this is not the best thing for you to be doing, then you should be doing whatever is the best thing for you. You know, I just don't need problems, and my band, the discipline and everything is like, jingle. I mean, totally the contrast, you know.
He told me about some of the, because that was a time when you guys were all into party, la fresa.
I was a local man.
That you had a brother or a cousin or something who was supposed to be the disciplinarian, Tony something. Was it a Tony or somebody?
My brother.
Was that your brother? ¿Cómo se llama?
I have a brother named Tony.
Yeah,
Tony Top.
He'd been in the Marines or something.
Yeah.
And you brought him into discipline, and I said, and here's this bunch of vatos locos. And he wanted to run the band like a military platoon.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like the way he described it, you know. But that was a memorable band you had with those people, wasn't it? Con Adagio, Gallardo, y Tony.
Yeah, and Ham was good when the time. Everybody that's come in here is, like I said, I've learned from them, and everybody's added something to my career. And Tony's a real. He likes to be a sophisticated musician. Likes, you know, good music, and that he is. So it was through him that he contacted Gallardo and got him in the band, and then other real good musicians. As a matter of fact, it was through Ham that I met Luis Gasca.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted to, Ham organized the band because I was disappointed the way it was. It was just really undisciplined, really. And he decided he'd be the boss and do it, you know.
Chicano music.
Well, through my dad and uncles and aunts, and through a little programming that would happen like at 4:30 in the mornings in little towns around in Temple. That's where I'd hear la música mexicana, the conjunto mariachi, you know. But at the time, no llega nada de Chicano music like Isidro, nada, that was till later.
Mm-hmm.
But Beto V and I, I'm sure, different times. But I was influenced by jazz because I was a kid. I wanted to play jazz. In 55, when I first started playing, first number I learned on the guitar was in B-flat, and it was Hot Toddy. And then Over the Rainbow and Moon Glow and all the classic Stardust, Misty, The Nearness of You. It's not the nearness. So I grew up playing all that stuff, you know. That's in me as a kid. I love those classic standards,
right.
As well as later on, ella, in all these beautiful ranchera songs that I love, but along with B.B. King and Muddy Waters, and along with Hank Williams and Hank Thompson, you know, I was tuned into all of that.
Yeah.
That's all of me. So when I do Little Joan, all of that's involved there.
So by the time you get into your mature period, which begins in the late 60s, let's say, it's natural for you then to combine American and Chicano, Mexicano elements into your music, but it just flows right one into the other without any difficulty.
With no difficulty.
And the people seem to be in tune with you. I mean,
well, I think
the audiences, which remain in Chicano, obviously.
I think that's you and I. I mean, that's 27 million of us here, Mexican Americans.
Well, let me ask you this. Think about it for a moment if you feel you have to. Do you feel there's a particular generation of Chicanos that are your true fans? Or maybe I'm putting it wrong. Is there a generation of Chicanos, Mexicanos, Tejanos that are the ones that really appreciate your music versus other generations who may be younger or older than us?
You know, I'm real fortunate in that area. All the people that have been exposed to Little Joe's music is... they're true fans in the sense that when I was starting out and I was a kid, there were some older people that I entertained that had kids my age that I entertained, who got married and have kids that I entertained, who have kids and three generations, even four generations hand me down Little Joe. I've been in these families, you know, in their homes, so I'm a hand-me-down commodity through the generations to all peoples. And one of the most amazing things, Manuel, today is children, the reaction that children take to me. I guess the grandfather feeler, I don't know what it is, man, but it's just goddamn impressive and touching how babies, I'm talking about little children, sing the songs and they recognize. I think the name Little Joe must attract them, and plus their mothers, their parents, fathers have passed me on down. And it's only logic, too, that there are more kids than there are grown-ups now, you know. That's why I'm saying un camarada mío's got six kids now. So there's six more fans opposed to him, just one, you know. So I do parades, I do concerts, and I do things with children. And I can't get over how they embrace me, how they are my true little fans. Mm-hmm. The story's always the same. Oh, she's only 3 years old and she knows your song, you know, and he doesn't speak any Spanish, but canta todas tus canciones, you know, y grita como tú, and we're talking children. And that's amazing, you know, that's... Yeah.
The reason I ask you that is because, maybe perhaps because you're unique, you transcend, or, you know, go beyond some of the problems. But, you know, I used to be an orchestra musician myself, first in Texas. You might have heard, although you may not remember, there was an orchestra there, Eugenio Gutierrez's orchestra. Did you ever hear about him?
Eugenio?
Eugenio Gutierrez, by any chance. He was from the Valley.
You know, yes.
And he recorded for Falcon Records, and a little bit for Ideal as well.
I remember the name.
Well, they were next door neighbors to us, and when I was a kid, I showed some talent in music, and my father told me, you know, my son, why don't you teach him how to play? And he taught me, and towards the latter part of his life, ya está viejo, todavía tiene orquesita para allá, he brought me in, and I played with his band before he finally retired. But, in the 70s, in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and into the early 80s, there were orquestas all over the place, you know, weekend orquestas.
Yeah.
They're gone, Joe.
Yes, they are.
In California, they're gone. Because the generation that supported that music is too old, and their children, they're going on into other kinds of things.
Yes,
so I just wondered if you had felt that there was a particular generation that really subscribed to you, or if you're about the only one who has managed to, you know, carry the music through to even...
I know I'm the oldest guy doing this out in the circuit. Well, Ruben and I are the same age. Ruben's beautiful, man. He's got one hell of a beautiful band, too.
He's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Is he brothers to Alfonso Ramos?
He's his brother, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Alfonso?
Alfonso's there, but Alfonso was always wanting to be just a weekend warrior, like you say. Sí, sí. But I don't know about... no, certainly not. And you're right, like Isidro López, for example.
There's a generation that the younger people don't.
Right. Know. And it's sad because the musicians, all musicians, Isidro López should be written about.
Oh, he'll be in my book.
Yes, most definitely.
There'll be a chapter on him too.
And all these young groups coming up, artists and stuff, they should know about Isidro. I'm lucky I know about him. I learned from him. I'm honored that everybody that I come in contact, you know, Joe, you inspired me to start all the young. Oh, that's wonderful. But you know, they would be much more inspired if, I think they'd be better off if they knew about Isidro, people that inspired me, you know. But I'm fortunate that I've transcended through these generations, and gracias a Dios, it just keeps getting bigger. My audience continues to grow. I know that not everybody can continue to come see me because some of them have already died, man. But their sons, their daughters, their kids continue, you know. And those kids bring other kids, whether they're black or white, and they get turned on to what's going on. So it's not kept in the barrio like or la family no more.
Why do you think the orquesta as an institution has died out generally in the Southwest?
Lack of musicianship, and I didn't even let you finish. But like I said, you know, it's easy to pick up a synthesizer and play with two fingers, mm-hmm. opposed to having to learn what music's about, you know.
Fíjate, yo te voy a decir a ti, because I was living here in Fresno. I had played, you know, with orquestas in Texas, and then I moved here, went to school here, college. And I was playing with a weekend band. My brother-in-law had a band here. And we used to do música, tú sabes. Y un día, I was in the car. It was in 1972. It was a hot summer day, I remember it. And I turned on the radio, and this band just blasted me out of my seat, man. I said, Jesus, what is that? Y cuando se acabó la música, dijo, Little Joe y la familia, las nubes. I tell you, it was just like a bolt of lightning.
Wow, I like that story.
I got home and I told my wife, you know what? I just heard this band out of Texas, man. That just blew my pants out. And we went out and looked for your record. It took us about 2 or 3 months for the record really to get over here. And we bought it, and we started stealing your arrangements so we could play the dances here, you know? Las Nubes and Que Culpa Tengo and all that stuff. And it was at that point that I began to realize that I wanted to get back into education and someday do that sort of thing.
I'm honored for that. And you know, in the old days, like yourself, musicians were schooled. They went to school to play music,
yeah,
whatever instrument. That's not the case anymore. That's the difference. When I said lack of musicianship, I meant that, you know, that they're not schooled, you know, Gallardo, you know, like one of my kids, he's gotten, not grants, but
scholarships.
He's been playing drums since he was 2 years old. He's 21 now, and he's taking music. He's learning piano, you know, he's going to classes, learning different instruments, learning theory, learning everything that goes with it. He wants to be a music producer, engineer. He wants to, for TV, for movies, for, you know, he's got, because he can play, mm-hmm. but he doesn't go on the road because that's not enough for him just to be able to play, and he likes to play with schooled musicians that play well. That's not the kind of musician that's coming out of Texas anymore.
You're not attracting those musicians.
That's not the those musicians are playing clubs or sit down jobs at all the older people, you know, the older generation musicians. The new ones aren't schooled. That's, music's not that way with them.
Do they play something else? The new musicians, the younger people, will they play top 40 or what?
Yeah, most of them, the young ones, of course, they always want to copy and they go top 40. But the ones that are doing La Onda Tejana, you know, they're not schooled that way. They're not reading their music like you guys had to do it. Like, you know, that's lacking, you know.
I have a son, by the way, who's 17. He wanted to come to meet you. And he's very talented, toca trompeta, pero, you know, he's been learning jazz. But he's been listening all his life to your music and all the música tejana, because we have all the old albums and todo. And he's going to love that music, you know. I showed him the poster, and he says, Little Joe, man.
Well, see, that's a perfect example of what I was trying to explain, you know. I'm a hand-me-down name, you know. And anybody that like the musicians that understand music, you know, is attracted to what I do, because I employ the musicians that do, the good musicians, you know. I come up with the ideas, but somebody has to orchestrate them and voice them and do the whole thing, you know, and the chords and all that. And it's like yourself, you say you heard Las Nubes, you could appreciate a good arrangement. Yeah, Gallardo's hizo garras.
Yeah. All that album was a memorable album. Ese y el otro que siguió de ese, según me dijo Tony, you recorded that and then you recorded Total.
Total.
Right.
That's
that was the last album con ese, that particular
con ese grupo. Uh-huh.
Man, that was, you guys, did you ever know el dueño de Ideal,
Marroquín?
Yeah, Arroyo, yeah. Marroquín. I spent a morning with him, interviewing him before he died, and he told me that, we talked about Beto Villa a lot. He says, you know what made Beto Villa is that he could play ranchero and jaitón. Remember the word
Haiton? I've heard it, and I don't know that I know
it. Like high class.
Yeah. High class. Yeah, la raza con el Haiton. Muy Haiton.
And that album had it, you know, I don't know if you even realized it, but you guys had that.
Haiton.
You played, you know, bien ranchero de amare.
Yeah.
And then you turn right around and play very sophisticated.
Well, that's.
Bien Haiton.
That's Little Joe. I tried that, you know, because that's what I'm saying. I'm saying from the blues to, you know. music ranchera, that's why not. I feel that, you know. So I see what you're saying, and that's what
would you call yourself, bicultural, in the sense that you're Mexican and American?
Very much so.
Fuse inside of you, and you're
that's what this music is, bilingual, bicultural music.
Bimusical.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Whenever
I mean, I like Duke Ellington.
Yes, on after tres. Whenever you know, just tell me. Hasta aquí, that's all I can.
No, le estoy dando tiempo a los guys.
I'm here at your, you know, at your. I'm at your mercy right now. Whenever you feel that that's it, just let me know, and we can continue some other time. But before I want to ask you something important. What I feel is important. You were basically poverty stricken when you were smaller. You grew up in a poor family.
I'm still poor, poverty stricken. Yeah, I was born in a 3-wall car garage, dirt floor, that belonged to un compadre de mi jefito, and I was a 7th. So you imagine, una tecurichito, you know. And like, you know, I was the 7th, and I was the first one born in town.
There were 13 of you, brother. Yes.
13. And
family, brother.
Yeah. So being born in a situation like that, in a condition like that, dirt floor, little garage, which 2 weeks after I was born, my family had to move out of there, and that's when we moved up to the Negro section, because of flood. That area would flood. Y salían los armadillos or los tacuaches. That's what they decían, la tacuachera. And I almost drowned. 2 weeks, my mom and kids got flooded in there. So that's why we moved. From that day on to now, Manuel, everything to me is a plus. Everything to me is a gain. Every year, gracias a Dios, you know. That's a long ways from that. I grew up picking cotton and the saijando with the family and all that. And we didn't think or knew we were poor. We were a big family. We were happy. My dad worked in the railroad, and he would come and go with us do some seasonal work off and on. And my mom was always there, pregnant, pulling a sack with kids riding on it and kids under the trailer, the del algodón and all that. In 1954, my dad got busted for possession of a couple of joints. 1955, they sent him up because all we used as defense was $50. So he got, out of 4 years, he did 28 months, and I was 15 at the time he went in. When he got out, I was 17. When I assumed command of my family, because my older brothers were in the service and my older sisters were married and gone, so I was the oldest, and there was the rest of the kids, and one sister was home pregnant and with already one little niece there. So you know, I remember distinctly finding a quarter, and God, that was a blessing, because you could get so much for a quarter back then, you know. So when I'd go to movies when I was like 10 years old. I'd go to a movie with a quarter, 9 cents for the movie. Some places was like 5 cents, but for 9 cents you get in a movie. For a penny you get 2 caramel candies. For a nickel you'd buy a bag of popcorn, and for a dollar, for 10 cents. You'd get a hot dog. So with a quarter, I'd go to a movies, buy 2 candies, a bag of popcorn, and a hot dog. With a quarter, you know, gasoline when I started driving was 14, 15, 16 cents, whatever the gallon was. When my dad was in the pen, I assumed command of the family. When he got out, he came back and got drunk and started to go back into his old habits and his hassling my mom. I got up, I was a skinny little kid. I didn't weigh 100 pounds till I was 18, and I got in the middle of it, and he freaked out because I made a stand. I said, it doesn't work like that anymore. And we became real good friends. I just stayed in command. My brothers retired out of the service. Everybody went around the world. They all came back to Temple, Texas. They most all live there now, my niece and everything. And to this day, they still, no le digas a Chemo, or si Chemo sabe, that's my nickname for Jose Maria. You know, they still look at me like their boss or their, you know.
Father figure.
Yeah, their father figure. And they don't want to rile my feathers or, you know. But I'm always there for them, you know. I love sharing my good fortune with all my extended family, which we're bunches. My mom has like 190 kids, great-grandchildren.
Wait, that picture you have in that album.
That was total, and that was just a few of the beginning of that.
Is that all your family?
Yeah, that's my immediate family, their brothers and sisters and their kids. Well, it's triple.
The whole tribe of you, man.
It's exactly what it is. It's quadrupled since then. So I still didn't know what hard times were. I picked cotton until I was 17. I graduated the following year
from high school?
From the fields. I dropped out at the seventh grade when my dad was in the pen. So today when I speak to kids, you know, I can't stress the importance of an education, and they have to damn well believe me, because I know the importance, because I don't have one, you know, and I've been embarrassed many times, and I could be so more successful had I had a lot more education would have been great, but even a little more, you know.
Yeah, but there might not have been a little Joe if you'd been college educated.
Who knows, verdad?
Your destiny was to provide music for the people, man.
That's probably the way it is. But you asked me a simple question, that I come from a poverty family. Yeah, and now looking back, you know. So to me, gracias a Dios, every day is just wonderful, you know. And that is the main reason that attracts me to try to help and relieve other people that are less fortunate. Because
did you ever experience discrimination?
¿Cómo?
Gringos? Did you ever experience discrimination from the
Oh, gringos? Hell yeah. Everything that a poor Mexican can experience, I've experienced. The only thing I've never experienced is being in trouble with the law. I don't know why because I'm no, I mean, it's not like I haven't done anything that, but yeah, there's been confrontation con los blancos siempre, you know. And not on a personal level, or sometimes yeah on a personal level, but that still continues, and I know it real well. I know the feeling of it, and I recognize it immediately, and I don't have to take it, you know, because my dad taught me that, you know. So it's been a long stretch, but I live in a beautiful country, man. There's America, and there are you can make it if you try, but lo tienes que poner de amare, because there are outlets, you know. But then that's a self individual other thing. But it's been a good life for me, Manuel. My mom is alive, and my brothers, and we're not a rich family in terms of monetary, but everybody's there, everybody eats, and everybody's healthy. And my youngest brother must be like 38, 39, my oldest brother 64, and they're all there, man. That's Jesus. I don't see myself poor in any way like that.
Did you have to go somewhere, dear? A couple more things, and then we'll call it quits.
I don't think those guys are set up yet.
What was your first impression of accordion music? Música norteña. When you first started.
Alegría. I heard it in me. So,
you never had anything against it?
Oh, no.
The reason I bring this up, Joe, is because for many musicians in Texas, and this is one of the things I found out as I was doing, you know, researching Norteño music. Paulino, you know Paulino?
I love Paulino, yeah.
He grew up, most of those people grew up in poverty, you know, just like you and I did. And nomás que ellos, él y su hermano, este, I can't think of his name right.
Eloy
Bernal.
Eloy Bernal.
Yeah. They turned to conjunto music early on.
Mm-hmm.
But he told me that when he was growing up, he talking about discrimination, he felt that there was a group of Tejanos who were like middle class, crían medios jaitones, and they looked down on Norteño.
Sure, I know some of those people.
Trashy music. And he says, those people, Manuel, he said, they were the kind of people that looked to orquesta for their, you know, for their musical, because orquestas were supposed to be more sophisticated,
right?
You know, and they catered to a more high-tone crowd, where
yeah.
Norteño was down-home, you know, ranchero, date chingazos kind of music.
That's true.
And a lot of orquesta musicians, you know, when they were growing up, and people like Tony was one of them, Joe Gallardo, they
That's
didn't
right.
like Norteño music.
That's right.
Because they felt it was trashy music. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your own personal experience was with respect to, you know,
I
the
think
orquesta
that
versus conjunto.
I think that if I discriminate against a music, other than, and I'm not doing that about rap, and that's the only thing that's come up in my lifetime that I don't know about that, because I don't hear or feel any music in it. I don't think it'd be fair for me to boast of how fortunate I am and God's been good to me if I felt that I discriminated against any kind of music or any one instrument. The accordion is a beautiful instrument. It's very intriguing. And there, Texas has produced some of the hottest accordionistas that I've ever heard in the world. And
speaking of which, if I may interrupt you, do you know Oscar Hernandez?
Yeah, sure I do.
Have you heard from him at all? What's he doing these days?
Not lately. Joel Guzman is one hell of a musician, and he's been playing accordion since he was 4, so he must be like 34 now, I don't know, but
but you never had anything against him?
No, desde que el acordeón me alegró de volada. And I know some people that thought when I did the album Los Carnales de Little Joe, it's all conjunto con Tata Vela, they thought Joe's degrading music by he's lowering his himself to that, but it's a parallel thing to country music. People say, oh, it's hillbilly. And Las Nubes is country hillbilly music.
Yeah, but you elevated it to a very sophisticated level.
That's what can be done through music. You can sophisticate any one song, but that's where the trick comes in musically. And that's
what you know that here in Fresno,
go ahead.
Because there was a time when you put out that album that just established you as the king of Chicano music. That album did for Chicano music.
Para la gente.
Yeah. And there were people here in Fresno, Chicanos, who thought Texas music was trash. But when they heard you, they changed their minds. Some of them became the biggest fans you ever had.
Wow.
When you used to come to Fresno, they would go to that music. But anything else, they thought... So, I mean, it's obvious to me that when you were recording that music, that you were elevating it to a higher level. And
gracias
I don't know
Dios
how aware you were of that, or, you know.
Not as aware as I am of today, but I was aware enough to know that I wanted to use the symphony strings with my music.
Do you think it would give it more class, or was it just something you wanted to try?
I know it would give it more class because, like I said, as a kid, I heard all the big bands, and I heard classical music. I like symphonies. You know, I like all that good old Hayton stuff, man. I love it. When I have time to listen to the radio, I like to listen to that, you know. I love Mel Torme, you know. I love all the black old singers, old white singers. I grew up listening to Frank Sinatra, Pearl Bailey, you know. But I also know Loretta Lynn. And Willie Nelson and Roy Rogers and all those guys. When I did Las Nubes, first I knew that's the project I wanted to do. Second, I knew I had to find the right song. That's why I re-recorded it. I did it in 3-4 the first time.
Yeah, and the first time was a very ranchero song, very simple.
Right.
When did you record the first version of it?
No me recuerdo, must have been... It was about 66.
Yeah, about 66. Yeah. It was just a very...
I learned it off the Bernal recording, I think.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. But then when I knew I wanted to do something different and I wanted to put some class into the music, I searched my brain for... I knew it had to be the right song. And Johnny and I talked it over, and I said Las Nubes, because I could hear those chords. I don't know, I can't play them, but I can hear them, and I can no, wait till you hit the right one. That's the chord I want to play there, you know. So I didn't know to what effect it was gonna have, but I knew that I was gonna make a difference. Some people told me, "Hey, la raza no quiere eso." And I said, hey, la raza no sabe lo que quiere. We have to give them something they can appreciate even if they don't know about it. And that's been the case. But after that experience, and like that, I tell you, that song continues to grow every day. That has nothing to do with language. Black, red, yellow people, white people hear it. Oh, how beautiful. And I can't understand what you're singing, but they get the feel, man. Ser lagrimean con los violines and all that, you know.
Did you guys gather together? I mean, when you were... Let's talk about that song, since it's such an important song. Mm-hmm. Did you say... Was it Joe Gallardo who did the arrangement for that?
Joe orchestrated it for me.
Yeah.
I gave him the direction as to what, but I couldn't tell him what chords.
But did you consciously think at that time about mixing that real heavy ranchero? Because you start off real ranchero. Mm-hmm. And then you get into that very, you know, smooth... Mm-hmm. Sec. Were you consciously trying to mix ranchero with more sophisticated...
Yeah, that's the exact thing. That's why I went... That's why I go into that... We still do it, and all bands are doing it now. You know, they do it with a conjunto now, or right. And then going to strings or orchestration with brass and stuff. But that was the whole thing, to take one song from scratch where it feels real rancho to high tone. I like that word.
And then bring it back down again?
Yeah.
You did that many, many times after that. You did it in Que Culpatengo, where you said you borrowed from Johnny Carson, and it goes into real ranchero sound. Yeah. You did it in... This is just a song that comes to my mind right away. In El Juan Charrasqueado, where you ended in a real jazzy mode con violina y leche, you know?
I'm aware, because I think about these things before I do them, you know. I really can't... I don't know of anything that happened accidentally when it comes to this. And it's not like... I'm not the only one involved in these things, but I learn from others. Like I say, I get people, since I can't write the music, I find the right person to bring out what's in my head musically. And that's where good musicians like Joe Gallardo, like Bob Gallarza, is excellent for that.
Who is Bob Gallarza?
He's a guitar player from...
Is he as good as the guy you used to have?
He's the best.
Paul Mad Dog Velasquez, what was his name?
Yeah, Paul Velasquez, Mad. I've been spoiled by good guitar players, but Bob's been excellent because he's self-schooled. He's been around the world with the Fifth Dimension many times, and he can write for anything. As the LA, but he lives in Houston now. I reactivated him and as my producer and guitarist, and we work on a lot of projects together.
But he's not coming here tonight.
He's coming.
Oh,
yeah.
He's going to be here with you tonight.
Yeah, he should be here. So and now he's produced a lot of the bands in Texas for Capitol and CBS, Sony. But these things, you know, I like different. I like what might be considered weird, but I like it done right. That's why I go to people that can musically orchestrate it so that it's correct, you know. But I've become more... I know how to put a hit together now. I started to say that early, you know, that it's a combination of things.
Well, let me ask
but I'm aware something. When I'm cutting a hit, I know that it's going to be a hit. I have to know that now.
Are you as willing to experiment today as you were back in the 70s?
More so now, because I have a little more knowledge about what I'm doing. Yeah, I love it.
But would you try something as outlandish as what you did in Las Nubes, where you have that... section with a
sure
harmony.
Sure, I'm doing that kind of with country western and
yeah, but country western is simple music by definition. You can't do with country western what you could do, say, with jazz or with, you know.
No, but if you use country western music and you mix it with norteño and you sting it with jazz, you get some cool stuff, man.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was listening to a piece they were playing on Radio today that you did exactly that.
Yeah.
You had, you did it very well. It was Que Canzonera.
Thank you.
I forget. It was an old song. I think it was an old song, but it had country. It had the steel guitar. I thought, you know, and you fit it in just, you know, as if it was second nature to you to do that. You know, to bring in a ranchero mexicano sound with a country western, and I could feel a little jazz in there as well.
Yeah, it mixes. It mixes well.
You have to be careful,
man,
because you can make a mess of it, but you don't.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It, when I started using flutes in the recording, but you have to have the right song that calls for that feel and sound, you know. The projection, the color of a sound, it's all layered, you know, and you can't just, I want to use this instrument here. You just can't put a round peg in a square, you know, it doesn't work that way. Things have to fall in naturally, and they have to blend, and they have to connect, you know. They have to synchronize musically, and musically you can do it all, but feel-wise,
yeah.
And that's the whole essence, I think, of. If I'm going to play blues, I want it to sound like blues, but more importantly, it has to feel like blues. So if you do it with a trombone or an accordion or a violin or a guitar, it doesn't matter. It has, the feeling is there. It's not the instrument. It's the feel.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be country, then it should feel like country. If it's ranchero, it should have that ranchero feel. If it's jazz, it should feel like jazz. Of course, it should sound like it too. But when you go from the jazz feel to ranchero, and just it, everything can blend if you ease it in or take it out or however, you know. But the whole idea is the feeling of it. It has to feel like what your intention is. The presentation, of course, like however, whatever in orchestration or instrumentation you're using, but it's got to feel. And people, sometimes musicians think that if they just use the steel guitar and accordion, that it's automatically gonna project something. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that. I don't find that in music. So for me to blend in all these things together, it's una capirotada, man, una ensalada de música, you know. It's only because that's all in my head and in my heart, and because I love.
Probably in your life.
All my life is that way.
Live that life of.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Part Mexicano, part Americano, so.
Same thing with my food, you know. I mean, all food is great. It's just como la preparan, you know.
Yeah.
All music is wonderful. It's just how it's done. But I get away with stuff that, and only because you're pointing these things out to me, I didn't know how outrageous I've been about this shit, you know. But
many followed in your footsteps when you started doing that. I know that Latin Breed did it, and Sonny, you know, Sonny did it.
See, and they've continued, and I appreciate it.
Did it.
Yeah.
Many people did it. Do you think the kind of music? And I guess it's still developing.
Very much so.
Is it too early to say that Tejano music had a golden period and it's gone through that? Or
it's had one because...
When was that golden period for you?
Well, for me, it's still...
For the music as a whole, not for Little Joe, but the music. The
right.
Music scene.
There was a time when Bernal was blazing the trails and Beto Villa was still going, and Isidro Lopez, when all the other bands that were traveling throughout the United States, predominantly the Southwest, but throughout the United States, around the Great Lakes and down into Florida and stuff, except the, almost the East Coast is untapped as yet.
Yeah.
But then it declined with the influx of Mexican program directors. The format changed because the companies, like I said, would send their representatives with the music they want on the air. And they started forgetting about Musica Tejana. They just ousted it, and the bands, because it's not being played and stuff,
when
it just died. Well, I took a tour. One of my last tours that I left the state was in '79, And then I stayed through till 85.
You were
I stayed in Texas. I wouldn't leave the state of Texas. I was involved at Mickey Gillies from Houston, Gillies Place. The owner, partner of the Mickey Gillies Sherwood Choir, insisted that I open up a little Joe club down the street from Gillies. And that's where Bob Gallarza and I hooked up after all these years. I was running a club, and I was really involved with the country western scene, you know, and there in Texas. And I just, I got really disturbed that the music wasn't being played any longer. They played Little Joe through the years, but then they started dropping out. The other bands stopped touring because there was no support. And for example, the Rainbow Ballroom's been here as long as I've known it, and they would never go forward. And all these little clubs and places, there was nothing going forward, and they didn't.
That's where I heard you for the first time, by the way.
The promoters didn't want to expand.
75.
They didn't want to expand, and then they wanted to segregate the shows. They never wanted to cross it over, and I got pissed. And I said, "Well, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do this anymore," you know. But when I got back touring, because I get into CBS, I had to backtrack and come back through the Rainbow.
Let me ask you this. Was there kind of a dip, not just for you, but for Tejano music generally in the late 70s, early 80s, where it just didn't... Is that what you're saying? That they didn't promote it and it...
That's what happened. That's what happened. Mid-80s... the beginning of the 80s, early 80s, it started dropping out. It's now coming out again, and people write about it. Texas music is getting so popular, it's going as far as California. Texas music being from Seattle to Miami, man, to Chicago to San Francisco.
But it's a different Texas music, is it, from the 70s?
Yes, it is. Like I mentioned,
the big band is out. I mean, all the horns and all that.
They're not touring. They're there, but they're not touring.
Who do you mean, like... Latin breed?
Yeah, bands like that.
In San Antonio, Lamas, okay.
Yeah, and they stay in Texas. Uh-huh. El Paso's got a lot of bands like that, a lot of bands, you know. And there's a lot of those bands still, brass, you know, horn bands and stuff, but they're not touring. One of the bands that continues and has been around a long time is Tierra Tejana, and they are tight, man. That's a Texas band.
Yeah, they...
A good Texas band, man.
Well, they're obviously clones of Little Joe. I mean,
very much so, and I appreciate it because the guitar player plays all that funky little groovy stuff that I intended or attempt playing, todas las pasaditas and all that. And he plays the hell out of my. I really admire
they're
that.
They're like a copy of the. Of you when you had the horns.
Yeah, and they do good at it. They're real good, I think.
They came out with this song, I guess, about a year ago or 2 years ago. Que pegó aquí en California también las hijas. Was that them who did
Las Hijas? Yeah, that's them. Las Hijas de Don Simón.
Yeah, that was a pretty catchy little tune.
It did real good for them.
Yeah. Está como la, ¿es la sombra that has el Sancho? Is that the one that's been a big hit también?
Yeah. See, those are the kind of groups now that are there, little kids, you know, that young musicians and stuff. And... they're beginning to swing into playing cumbia, something that these other old bands from my times were kind of discriminant against, but only because they rather play salsa and jazz, salsa and the Latin stuff, you know, like Santana.
Were you influenced by that?
Oh, very much so.
In your life, the salsa?
Very much so. That's why during that period when I got influenced by that, I went from Latin airs to La Familia. I discovered the Bay Area, and I discovered Latinismo.
Tell me, how much time did you spend in the Bay Area? Were you there for a while or something?
I would come and go and hang and work out of there a lot because of Luis Gasca.
And this was when?
Late 60s, 68, 69, and early 70s.
You spent some time in the Bay Area then?
Yeah, I stayed like 3 months in Oakland, and I would come and go. San Jose was like my second home. And then in 74, I lived in L.A. for 10 months, and that was the extent of that.
Were you trying to branch out, or what were you?
I had an office in L.A. with Buena Suerte Records on West Pico Boulevard, right along with all the other labels, and the office was there like for 3 years, and it was my West Coast office, and I moved over here looking... for what we have in Texas that I thought was here, you know, camaraderie, and I was looking to do like a Johnny Carson show a La Chicana, mm-hmm. which is yet still to come. And
California is different, isn't it?
Very much so. Aquilos, the people are all beautiful everywhere, but here they're so divided and don't seem to know it, you know. I made the statement that Tejanos are first Tejanos, and then you're Chinese, oh, yeah, but you're Tejano first. And California todavía, no, yo soy de El Salvador, no, yo soy de Oregon, no, yo soy Michoacano, yo soy, no, I'm from East LA, Charlie, yo soy de Bakersfield, hey, what's the difference? But here, first they're that, and they're not Californianos. And that's how the music goes.
Yeah. And Texas, well, California has never, you know, when I was living in Austin, there was a station there that was really neat stations, La Doble X, que le decían KMX, do you remember?
Yeah, KMX. Yeah.
And there was this guy there, I can't think of his name right now. He used to have a program que se llamaba Estamos en Texas. I mean, you, there's no such thing here in California. You can't have a program in California que diga Estamos en California because...
You know, that's right.
Estamos en Texas implies that there's a unity to the music, to the, there's a sound that you can exploit. Aquí, Estamos en California, big deal, what does that mean? You know?
I guess that's my point.
Yeah,
yeah, that, that's what I'm saying.
Well, Joe, I've kept you here for a while. I probably could keep you here another hour or two, but
I'd love it. Vamos across the street and let you got something to do.